Elon Musk is a African king, you know? He's an African American king.
An African American king.
He is.
Because he's South America, South African even.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean,
he could claim more African cred than a lot of African, quote-unquote, Americans can, because he's actually, like, African.
But I don't think he really spent a lot of time in South Africa, though, right? Like,
I don't know anything about his life like that, to be honest.
No, me neither.
I just know that's a joke that's been going on around at the moment. It's a meme, because everyone's mad that he's buying Twitter, and everyone's like, you should respect the African-American king, or whatever.
Oh, my God. I thought everyone would be happy, because then they'll be able to get their checkmark.
Yeah, the fucking fake check mark that he's... I don't know. It just seems silly to me. Like, the whole thing.
Well, no, it makes sense. Like, from, like, a certain point of view where, like, you don't really know if the person you're interacting with or commenting or doing anything is a real person or not.
Yeah.
Because anyone can make a Twitter account, for sure. But anyone can still make a Twitter account. But if you want a verified check to verify that you're a real human being, then, yeah, you get
but
this checkmark.
But the way you get verified as a quote-unquote real human being is by paying for Twitter Blue, which is a monthly subscription service.
But you still also probably have to get your identity verified in some other way as well.
Because they have a different... What he's proposing is they'll have the checkmark system for people who are members of Twitter Blue, and then they would have a second system of verification for public figures. So,
but bots aren't going to pay for Twitter Blue.
Why wouldn't they?
Because it would be economically.
It's only $2.99.
It'd be but per bot, that's like they control thousands of bots. That's how click farms work. That's how those troll farms work.
What so is like, a troll farm? Like, well, I'm so illiterate like, when it comes to this stuff. Like,
if you
people
want
talk
to,
about
if,
troll farms
if,
and bots, like I've,
if
I don't
you
think
want
I've
to
ever.
Spread, if you want to spread certain information, you can employ Twitter bots to share and comment on each other's posts of different articles and all of that kind of shit. That's like how the internet's being manipulated by political parties and all the rest of it.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought that it was just like rare that there would be bots.
No, so like that's one of the kind of like modern day conspiracy theories is the dead internet theory that I think I've mentioned before, where some people actually think that so much of the internet now is bots that there's only like 5% of its users actually that are real people.
So what do you mean that I've just been arguing with bots this whole time?
Quite possibly. Some of the stuff definitely.
But how does the bot like know my insecurities? How does it know which buttons to push?
Well, probably because it's got like a profile on you.
On me.
Yeah. Think about it.
Oh my God. Angie speaks 28-year-old schizo.
No, anyone
freak.
That anyone that is anyone that has anyone that is concerning enough to Twitter to the point they would shadow ban someone.
Yeah.
They would certainly want to collect an amount of information about that person as to why they're shadow banned for behind their own closed system.
Yeah.
So they have a profile on you.
Yeah.
So they can tailor it to whatever the fuck they want.
Oh my God.
And they think that profile's just for Twitter, just to go, this is a bad person
but
who
I'm
we've
not
classified
even...
as a bad person and this is why. No, they're going to give that information to other fucking people.
But I'm like not even that bad on Twitter though. I'm not even like good at posting like that. I'm like really sincere.
It doesn't
and
even matter. Your telephone
rubbish.
Number or your email address or anything that could also be shared with your Discord or your fucking... maybe not Discord, maybe it goes as deep as that, I don't fucking know, but like certainly your YouTube channel and other places where you're posting stuff, they link it all together, bro.
So like, they know?
Yeah, that's like your digital footprint, that's what the people describe as your digital footprint.
So they know?
Yeah.
That I'm a naughty girl?
Yeah, that you're a dissident bear, which is why you're shadow banned on Twitter and like, you know, people don't get notified on your YouTube and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Who knows though? Cause it's like, you can't know. And like, you don't want to sound like a paranoid.
And then they can also then send like,
frenic.
You know, they can also then put bots in to like say, oh, this is fucking shit, this is garbage.
No,
all the rest of it.
I feel like there are lots of people who just aren't that great, and then they say, oh, it's bots. The bots are the ones that come in for me.
No, dude. No,
maybe you're just a dickhead.
No.
And I just assume that I'm just a dickhead.
No, like even on like SoundCloud and stuff, like like it'll come up like someone's commented on your track, be like, oh great, let's have a look. And you'd be like, oh, like here and comment, check out my profile if you want 1,000 play. Like, I was like, oh, okay, right. Yeah, the bot.
Yeah, but those are like obvious bots things. I don't think that there are like bots that like mimic human speak or whatever that aren't like, aren't like automatically sus. Like, you could say that there are like trolls.
There are bots that literally post like ridiculous random videos in groups on Facebook and stuff just for engagement. I don't know how that works. I don't know how it works. I don't know how the monetization of it works. I don't know if it's like the amount of views you get on a video on Facebook then equates to ad revenue and money for those people.
Quite possibly.
That's the way I would kind of rationalize it.
Quite
but
possibly.
But that's how you, like, I'm in electronic music groups on fucking Facebook. You literally get people sharing like a panda giving birth. And it's so like out of nowhere. And you've definitely never seen a panda giving birth before. But it kind of gets your attention. You're like, what the fuck is going on right now? And then you look, kind of scroll up, and then you realize it's in the fucking electronic music producers group or something. You're just like, what the fuck is going on right now? What bot is posting this into this fucking random group of like people trying to make electronic music? What is the fucking logic here? You just got to follow the money, Lebowski.
Oh my God.
Any fucking time you find like, what's
a video of like pandas,
you
like
find the person that will benefit.
But I mean, like, isn't Elon Musk supposed to come in and like swoop and fix all of this stuff?
Well, that's kind of
like
the whole
digital Willy Wonka.
That's kind of the whole, his whole logic for the blue check mark paying thing. Because then you could even filter, and he's talking about the ways that you can filter your newsfeed and all of that kind of stuff and algorithms and stuff.
Yeah, but the reason I'm skeptical,
if you can literally filter it so you don't see anyone that's not Twitter blue,
yeah,
then you immediately get rid of all of the bots.
Me, in my mind, you're automatically a wanker if you get Twitter blue, because part of the charm of like being on the internet and part of the charm of not being a fucking check mark is that it's this sort of ridiculous wild west of insanity. So you have like crazy people, schizo posters, annoying trads, insane leftists, and a lot of bots.
So you think you think the check mark is not cool?
I don't think the check mark is cool. I think the check mark is like, if somebody has
it's not
a check
as coveted
mark,
as people think it is.
No, it's not. Like there are some people who are blue check marks that I don't despise. And it's because they're like a journalist or something, or somebody who writes or whatever, like public figure. But for the most part, if somebody has a blue check mark, or if I get followed by somebody who has a blue check mark, my heckles immediately like go up. It's a red flag. Yeah. For me, Twitter cred is all about having a high follow count, but having no check mark. That means that you're a real motherfucker.
Does that make you bazed, as the kids say?
Yes, that's the most bazed way to be. And like paying for a check mark, that sounds really like weird. And secondly, it kind of removes the charm. And to go back to Elon Musk, the reason I'm skeptical,
I think he was saying that you still get like the influencer / like public figure check mark.
Yeah, that will still exist, but now you have a fake one that you can pay for.
No. So that's just a way of like actually like verifying that you're a real person on Twitter. That's the whole point.
Yeah, but not really. It's about social hierarchy. Because if you like, part of the thing that makes Twitter a really toxic shit place to exist in any form is the fact that it has such a rigid social hierarchy and it's so metrics focused. Like, you have people who, if they do a tweet that gets like 100 likes, they're like, I'm doing numbers, and they feel like they've like accomplished something for the day or whatever.
Yeah, but
and then they tend to follow people based upon how it will get them more followers and social capital.
Yeah.
Like, it's all about the accumulation of social capital and to look like you are a big account, basically. And one of the things that makes people feel like they're a big account is having a blue check mark. And I feel like he's trying to sell, like he's coming in saying, hey, I'm going to fix all these problems that people are having. But really and truly what he's doing is pushing the incentive structure of the platform to its extreme limit, which is, you know, the rush for hierarchical status symbols, and also the way that it categorizes people off into easily sortable consumer demographics. So his idea of like an open source algorithm, oh, it sounds great, it sounds free, it sounds, oh, we can curate stuff. But what it really does is it like squashes out any content that doesn't specifically market itself towards a specific demographic, if you know what I mean. And so many of the most interesting voices and thinkers are people who are like eclectic. Like I consider myself to be quite eclectic in terms of my interests, what I talk about.
You think it'll reinforce the ecosphere?
Yeah.
Like the
big time. All I don't see any serious foundational
echo
changes.
Chamber,
yeah.
Ecosphere.
If we want to make social media a better place, there would need to be serious like foundational changes in terms of its incentive structure. And what its incentive structure is the accumulation of attention and the accumulation of prestige. And as long as that's like the major goal, it's going to be toxic.
But you can't have, that's going to be inherent to any kind of platform with a public non-anonymous profile.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Pretty much. You don't see that same sort of, I guess, system of hierarchy in places like 4chan and stuff where everyone's like anonymous, but you still see the
No, it's because you can't also collect anything.
Yeah.
You can be anonymous on Reddit and make a burn away account and just be totally someone else.
Yeah.
On an internet forum.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah.
But with Reddit, you'll still accumulate upvotes, gold, all of these things that makes you a Redditor, which puts you fucking all of that stuff.
That sounds
right?
Really lame.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Or like even on Funny Junk, you'd get like, yeah, you'd get upvotes, you get front page, how many times have you hit front page, all of that stuff.
But now with an open source algorithm, it's not something that's necessarily liberating for free speech. It's just sourcing people into their specific consumer demographics. And then those who create content for those consumer demographics are forced and locked into basically making it appear obvious that that's exactly what they're trying to appeal to. And that's been my major issue with Twitter, because you have some people who have like a persona or like a very strong voice that's like clearly not them. It's sort of a caricature that they've created. Either it's like a caricature of themselves or it's a caricature that they've just sort of fabricated. And they're appealing specifically to a demographic. And that tends to be the stuff that's like more successful on the platform. Whereas there's still room for eclectic stuff as long as it's like novel. But I feel like if this was implemented, eclectic stuff would die by the wayside. And it feels like that's sort of becoming more normal on the internet, especially for creative people or people who make stuff, create content. You have to really hone into a market now.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, people like Joe Rogan in a couple of years won't exist anymore. Like Joe Rogan, you look at his podcast, you can't necessarily pinpoint specifically what it's about. Like there are running themes and motifs for sure, but you can't say that this is a podcast about this specific thing or that specific. It's just a general sort of chat. And he has a lot of eclectic guests on and stuff like that. But now, if you want to put, you need to do a true crime podcast and appeal to the true crime people. Or if you're doing a political podcast, you need to appeal specifically to Marxists or specifically to trads or this or that. Like everything's becoming a lot more like niche and like weird. And then on top of that, in those niche little communities, they tend to be the most like hierarchical and focused on gatekeeping and shit like that. And all the sort of toxicity that we see on the internet, I feel like it's just going to become more reified. But he's sort of advertising it as if like an open source algorithm is going to solve the problems and this new system of verification will level the playing field. So you too can feel like a blue check mark. Whereas it's just like a major advertisement for Twitter Blue. There's a whole idea like, oh, free speech, this, that, benevolent millionaire, this, that, like, I don't even think that that's like a generative discourse. Like, I think that that's boring and bullshit. I think the most interest, like, we are where we are in society right now. Even if we nationalize the goddamn thing, the government would be 100 times more censorious in that sense. him having his hands on the platform, the reason that I'm skeptical about it isn't necessarily because of any of those things, but mainly because I don't think it would create any serious foundational changes to what social media is, how it affects us, how it affects society. And this shit genuinely is unraveling the fabrics of society. Like, what was his name? Parag Agrawal? No, sorry, that's the Twitter guy. Mm-hmm. It's a different guy that was at Facebook. I used a clip of him in a video, and he literally said that, like, the incentive structure behind Facebook, if unchecked, would destroy the fabric of society, destroy our social bonds. And he had his little come to Jesus moment when he left Facebook and sort of spilled the tea. And I feel like people really aren't taking that shit seriously.
Yeah.
It's just all these like little tiny band-aid solutions to a huge gaping problem that's making people more sad, isolated, atomized, mentally ill, self-hating, self-deprecating. You know, there's so many foundational problems.
Well, it's sort of like, you know, do you want a digital interface that does actually represent the real world? Because I think that's kind of what Facebook are trying to do, or Meta are trying to do with everything. So, like, that's why they want you to use, like, your real name and do all of that stuff to sort of, like, have marketplace with real people, real businesses attached to it, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Versus something like Twitter, that's something more completely internet focused.
Yeah.
And not really about community.
Yeah.
As such, in any way.
Yeah.
It's really just about shit talking in 140 characters.
Yeah.
And so, you know, is there value to the everything, like, you know, local businesses having a Facebook page and being able to promote and doing all of that stuff? Like, is there benefit to that stuff, or should it kind of be totally anonymized and stripped of all of those things and left as a complete, like,
tool? Well, these are the questions that we should be asking, but it doesn't seem as if anybody is asking those questions, because there's not very much talk or excavation into the kind of underlined incentive structures of the platforms people are complaining about.
Do you even need a central? I think it all comes as well from this sort of idea, like, because even Facebook trying to do that, like, it's still another way of going out of your lane a little bit.
Yeah,
they're trying to do so many things. Yeah. It's no longer just sharing what's on your mind or connecting with friends.
No.
It's now being able to sell items, run a business.
Yeah.
Fucking
scroll mindlessly.
Yeah, exactly. They've literally, people re-upload straight from TikTok to Facebook, and they've got the same fucking thing.
Find a hooker as well.
Well, I don't know. Maybe the whole finding friends and connecting with people, that kind of like falls within that remit anyway. Or maybe it falls within the services and business one. I'm not kind of sure of that one. But like, you're not going to run a fucking advert like that, though. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it falls within the people connecting and shady friend requests, you know, kind of deal there. But so it's just sort of, it's also like staying within your lane, right? We have eBay. If you're a shop, you're a local business, maybe you don't really need a fucking, and you want to reach international customers, and you want to have the global marketplace as your potential audience, then yeah, you make a fucking eBay page, you make an Amazon shop or whatever the fuck, because those are the avenues for those things.
Mm-hmm.
I think having like this sort of idea where you want to have a homogenous thing, and this all fits into the whole, like, everyone talking about the metaverse constantly, is having this homogenous digital landscape that we all exist in as consumers, to spend the majority of our time there.
Consuming, cooming, and ranting and raving about our political opinions.
Rather than just simply using the internet as a tool to accomplish your wants and desires as a human.
Well, to expand your horizons, really.
Well, even
that,
like,
was
you
the
know,
original
like,
appeal for the internet, for me anyway, was that I like to learn, and I also like to, I like to be exposed to things that are niche or esoteric or whatever.
For sure.
And the first thing I started using the internet for when I got my little paws on it was to find films and download them or like watch them illegally or whatever.
Yep.
And like most of my love for film and like the form came from the fact that I had access to like every film ever created at my fingertips.
Piracy.
And I could just go back and watch.
Piracy. Shame.
I know. Shame on me.
Shame.
Would you steal a car?
The Comcast police will be at our door, Angie.
Would you punch a grandma? Why would you steal a movie?
Admitting that on our podcast.
No, but seriously though, like that was the original appeal, was for me to learn and imbibe esoteric content or like dive into the annals of history or whatever the fuck. And I wasn't necessarily looking at it as an extension for socializing. That only started happening later on in my life, in that sense, in terms of like teen and adult years, early adult years. But then think about it, the kids that are growing up now, it's completely an extension. When we were growing up, you had to, like, if you wanted to hang out with your mate at the weekend, you had to call their fucking landline.
That's true, but like, I do, but at the same time, like, maybe just after that, when the first wave of broadband came out and you didn't have to choose between being on the phone and using the internet. like, you know,
my mom was constantly on the phone to Nigeria, so I couldn't use it.
Oh, there you go.
To play Neopets.
But no, I was playing Puzzle Pirates with my mates and fucking Club Penguin and socializing and all of these like primitive fucking MMO like games. Have a hotel, all of that stuff. And like, you know, World of Warcraft. Like the amount of off the cuff, interesting interactions I had with strangers in the early 2000s was like fairly regular, like anytime I used the internet.
Yeah,
almost.
But you didn't view them as your friends.
No, you didn't. And you
there
didn't.
Was like always this disconnect. There still is now, to an extent, but like there was a disconnect between internet friend and like your real friends, whereas now people's internet friends are their fucking friends.
That's
true. Who they think of when they think of their friends.
That's true.
Which is like,
because it would be like all of us were, you know, in a pirate crew or whatever. And then there was, you know, a couple of other people that sort of joined the crew or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you start chatting and they're in your same server and you get to know them after a while and stuff.
Yeah.
But you always still had your actual real life schoolmates that you were still like hanging out with every day and stuff.
Yeah.
Versus now where like that is your whole social interaction.
Yeah.
There is no offline anything. It's all just like the people you encounter in that. But
even then with like Twitter, there are so many things. Because the platform is designed to cause drama. Like the fact that you can't edit a tweet, for instance.
Mm.
Like these little incentive structures that could change the course of how things operate. Like say you say something, you should be able to fucking edit it. With Twitter, the only way you can edit stuff is by deleting it, which then looks incriminating, quote unquote. And think of how much less drama there would be if people actually had an edit button, for instance. Things like that. Like the whole thing is set up to incentivize inflammatory emotions, drama. Like the only way to improve that fucking website would be to give everybody like ration tweets. So like you get 3 to 4 tweets a week.
But again, it's sort of, it's because Twitter has evolved out of its current, out of the original ethos and kind of idea of it, right? Which was throw away thoughts and small tidbits of jokes or whatever the fuck. 140 characters.
Yeah.
That's not editable because it's just supposed to be fucking boom. Disposable, out there, gone.
But people don't treat it as disposable. No, they treat tweets as if it's like an insight into your very soul.
Well, not just that. Twitter is like the main place for narrative and where media
news
is even constructed.
Yeah.
Because even if you're reading an article today,
tweets
about anything,
yeah,
I would put a tenner on it that it will quote or reference
tweets,
or Twitter.
Yep.
Somewhere in there.
I mean, even Instagram now is basically just Twitter. It's screenshots of Twitter.
Mate, I'm really close to completely leaving Facebook.
I'm surprised you haven't already.
Well, it's just
my Facebook still exists, but I haven't touched it in like nearly 6 years or
it's
something.
Because I was running this like little like community of electronic producers and stuff, and then it all just got like too much of work and everything, and I haven't really done it, and sort of, you know, other things of doing other stuff now, and I can't really be asked, and so I don't really need it for that anymore. And like, I might as well just go on Instagram and just post pictures of my music and stuff and not really worry about anything else.
Yeah, I feel like you have I feel like you have more of an Instagram temperament because you're all about the vibes. Well, I'm like a Twitter person because I'm all about like
the being only schizo. The only time I've ever caught the social media bug and given a single fuck about any of those like metrics around followers or likes or any of that.
Yeah.
Was when I was on Funny Junk. In my early college days, because like I thought it was cool to get to.
You
to
mean
make
college is in high school, right?
So this would have been the last 2 years of American high school. Technically, is like 16 to 18 is for college or A levels.
Sixth form, yeah.
And then you go on to university, which is college in America, because of course you have to have
backwards.
Everything different.
I don't know why they always they try to be special. So silly.
What was I saying?
That you were on Funny Junk being a fucking weirdo.
Like, no, like getting like front page on Funny Junk was cool to me. Like making a funny comic in the classic, very early primitive meme style, or making one of those early primitive memes that other people thought was so funny that it got onto the front page on Funny Junk. I thought that was cool.
You showed me like some racist comics.
No, I didn't. I made one about my friend being racist at college by accident. Because it was funny, and then that got front page on Funny Junk. I got front page on Funny Junk
like
quite a few
times. Show me the memes that you made as a teen. And
oh
then
my gosh!
N word. I was like,
not all of them were
oh, no.
Absolutely not. I didn't do a lot of N word memes at all.
Yeah, you did. Don't lie. Every white boy has a secret.
It was the comics. It's the stick man comics.
Yeah.
With the faces.
Yeah.
That was the memes.
Well,
the rage
faces or whatever?
Yeah.
Or was this even before rage
faces? You know, with the troll face and fucking like those stickman figure panel comics. Like that
before
was the memes.
The advent of the Wojak.
Yeah, like this was like primitive shit, man. And then like, so I enjoyed getting like metrics on that and getting thumbs up and fucking front page status on that. And then, but before that, I also got the Tumblr bug.
Did you? Oh my god, no, you didn't.
Yeah, where I was just curating aesthetics and getting reposts and notes on all of my fucking aesthetic choices.
I can't believe that you were a Tumblrina.
And I really did like it when I like found something cool and then it got shared a bunch and everyone's like, oh my god, this is fucking sick. And I got like lots of comments on my choices for my blog. That was cool. But then also I sort of got to a point where I was just like, what the fuck am I doing? I'm just like finding other people's artwork on the internet and reposting it, and other people are liking the fact that I've reposted someone else's artwork. Like, what kind of dumb shit is this?
Some people take posting really seriously, though. It's like a full-time job for them.
That's fucking crazy.
You've not been on Twitter, dude.
No,
I've never been on Twitter all day long.
I tried
like every day, every time you're checking, you're seeing a new tweet. And I get like there, some people are doing it because it's like profile building. And it's the reason why I'm so shit at profile building for myself, because I just don't care enough.
All of it is around culture war, which is
what
I don't understand.
If you don't have enough to say, it's because people don't have enough to say. And the easiest thing to say is to drop your hot take on the culture war event du jour or whatever.
You're
incentivized to in order to get attention. And the more you do it, the more people, the more ubiquitous you make yourself, the more followers you get, the more people engage with your content, which could then translate to money and finances and all that shit. So that you're incentivized to be as online as humanly possible. And I can't stand that. And I don't believe that any of what he's proposing is going to change any of this shit.
No, like, I just...
like, these are all the things that culminate in the hostile, hyper-competitive, infantile environment that Twitter is. It's, like, psychological splitting, polarization, this Manichaean struggle. Like, all of that stuff is fucking so emphasized by the platform because it thrives on it. If it wasn't for the drama and the fucking call outs, and no one would be on Twitter. And the people who are on there get like constant, get a libidinal excitement from beef and drama and catastrophizing and all of this fucking bullshit. Like, the only time you catch me tweeting is when I have something I have to say. Mm. Otherwise, I'm not just going to be there like fucking farting the timeline.
That's how I never understood the platform, because I got into it very, very late. I tried to make a Twitter profile for my little collective, my like electronic collective, and just post our new albums and stuff.
Oh, that's
but I refused to fucking start commenting on what the fuck the Labour Party was doing or whatever the fuck else all these other like UK, you know, people within my remit were tweeting
and
about.
And
it's just like,
sad.
You're not talking about fucking acid music or or
no,
like anything.
Because
you're
what gets attention is political.
You're literally
shit.
Commenting on Brexit and fucking Boris Johnson.
No.
Like, how is this anything to do
even,
with
like you're saying,
electronic
even the
music?
Electronic music pages, the art pages, all of these pages, they're not sharing art or music most of the time. They're commenting on politics because that's what gets attention on the platform. That's what brings people your way. And like, even look at like, I'll post the dumbest, most innocuous, stupid political take, and then it will get like thousands of likes or some shit. But then I'll post like an episode of the podcast or a video that I've made or something that you've put effort into that's like actually a piece of work. That gets a lot less attention and engagement than your dumb brain farts or something that's contentious. So contentiousness is currency. And that's something that's sort of inbuilt into the platform in terms of what it promotes and what it shows as like normal and what gets engagement and stuff. And like someone like Musk would probably argue, oh, it's just human nature. I think some of it is, but I think that our nature also manifests what it's capable of manifesting, what it's incentivized to manifest. And what keeps people engaged in Twitter is the heightened contentious atmosphere of it all. And adding another metric to that, like Twitter Blue, that's another status chasing fucking, because again, people use it to chase status as well. That's another thing that Twitter is used for.
Yeah. I just don't think that, I think there's got to be people that feel like me and they're just like so fatigued with all of it that they just don't want to be on those platforms anymore.
Yeah.
And there's nothing keeping you there when you really think about it.
Yeah.
So like, I'm making the appeal, everyone just get rid of your account. Like, if you're mad about it or don't like any of it, just get rid of it. I'm literally going to walk away from Facebook after this Easter weekend. I've made the decision.
Are you now?
Through this conversation. It's
Are
just like
you?
That's my only like actual social media shit, and what I do is just mindlessly fucking scroll through that. So dumb. I might as well just like fucking not even bother. And then the only stuff I post is my music and fucking stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So just do it on Instagram
instead,
and just don't.
Instagram's its own like fucking cesspool, though.
Yeah, but I won't be involved in any of that. Any of the booty pics. Any of
are you not going to be involved
stuff.
In the ass pictures?
No.
I doubt that very much. Something about me. Something makes me doubt that.
No.
Jake's like, it's strictly for music only. No TNA.
TNA
on my
timeline. I'm trying to find that platform that's literally just about fucking music.
Isn't Bandcamp supposed to be that, though?
Kind of,
but it doesn't
like,
have like a promotional algorithmic kind of system type
of
thing.
Not really. Like, you know, I don't really. Bandcamp's never been promotional. It's always been you drive people to Bandcamp. The same thing as SoundCloud. You can tag all you want, but you got to drive people to your link on SoundCloud. You've got to get it embedded on playlists that are, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not. There's not like a social media platform that's really just about exploring music, exploring new music, exploring new artists, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist really.
Well,
like, Bandcamp exists to the extent where you can find new music and artists. I'm definitely not disparaging that.
Yeah.
Like, but as a social media platform where you can talk and share and promote new artists that people are actually engaged with, fuck no, that doesn't exist.
Well, we just have to ask our our digital Willy Wonka daddy, Elon Musk, to buy it for us, to make us the perfect platform.
Nah. Well, Bandcamp got bought by Epic. Epic Games.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's so weird.
Like, it is weird, and like, I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. Nothing's really changed so far.
Yeah.
And I think they've just said that they've gotten more funding now to do things like, you know, they want to basically do straight to vinyl pressing and stuff. So when you upload to Bandcamp, you can have the option to get it released as a vinyl.
Oh, that's cool.
And it just gets done by them and shipped by them, and you haven't got to deal with any of that stuff. Which is a fucking great idea.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, how would we get the money to do that unless some fucking mega corporation came and gave us the money to actually do something like that?
Yeah.
But it's also like, yeah, but then they're going to have fucking control over you, bro. And like, there's going to be all sorts of fucking weird stuff that goes on with that.
Encroach further into like the Blade Runner future, where like fucking tech oligarchs like own everything and control everything.
I wish it would be great. It could be great in a way where it's like they encourage, they like, you know, you're because they own Unreal Engine. So it's like you're fucking making a game in Unreal Engine. Oh, you need libraries of music. Bang, that's also connected to Bandcamp. And you can then also, like, you can have an option to license that as a fucking thing for other people creatively, like in a game or something, for a royalty share or whatever the fuck.
Mm.
Then it's like, yo, now you're talking. Now you're talking artists supporting artists and, like, getting together and making great stuff together and shit. Like, that's, like, what the internet should be used for.
Mm.
But that's, like, Utopian Jake. That's like not reality. That's like not the world that we live in. Do you know what I mean?
Unfortunately not. We live in a world where like the lamest tech billionaire now is going to control a massive part of like a massive stake of the internet.
I don't remember who it was.
At least Jack Dorsey is like kind of sexy, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really think so. I think he also looks kind of like a bug man as well.
You think he looks like a bug? No, I think he's like the most acceptable level of bug man that a man is allowed to be.
I can't remember who it was. I heard this joke where it's like Michael Jackson's plastic surgeon doesn't advertise that he's Michael Jackson's plastic surgeon. Do you know what I mean? Like, he kind of doesn't want anyone to know that that's him or whatever, because it doesn't look great. But I bet the guy that did Elon's hair plugs is advertising the fuck out of that.
Up and down, downtown.
Have you seen PayPal? Look at this. Look at Elon now. Okay, here he is. Night and day, baby.
Oh my God.
You don't have to be bold. You're just poor. Okay, just remember that.
No, those hair plugs do be pretty spectacular, to be honest. But no, Jack Dorsey has this sort of edginess to him.
He has a little bit of that kind of early internet, like we live in public kind of like craziness ethos sort of about him. But I also just don't think that I don't really know enough about him to sort of cast any further judgment.
That's kind of what makes him interesting, because he's not like everywhere. He's not like thirsty for attention in the way that Elon Musk is and like all these other fucking billionaires are.
He's super involved in crypto, which makes me super fucking skeptical of him.
Yeah, I'm not saying that he's a good person. Like, I'm just saying he has a little bit... He's like a little sexier. Like, he's like Elon Musk is sexless despite all the HGH and hair plugs. He still looks like he's smooth down there, you know?
He is the first Tesla bot.
Exactly. Literally. There's something weird about him that like freaks me out. But then he still tries to do this whole like cool Gen X dad thing. And like, I struggle to put myself in the headspace of the type of person who thinks Elon Musk is cool, you know? Well, like, I don't get it.
It's the same sort of, it's the next Steve Jobs sort of thing, right?
But Steve Jobs wasn't cool either.
No, Steve Jobs was very cool. Steve Jobs made the coolest products on the planet. Are you kidding me? Like in the iPod era and beyond, up until his death, basically, like, there was a massive cult of personality around and specifically Steve Jobs as a visionary and like all of that kind of stuff.
Bug people, because bug people attract other bug people. Only like STEM people are like jerking off
All right, well, and but the next generation of that has definitely been like people Tesla. Buying Tesla cars and like getting into ecosystem. Dumb libs.
And like he tries to do this, like Elon Musk is so fake and gay. Like he's like, oh, I'm all dissident. Free speech. And it's like most of the people who buy your fucking cars are like cranky, the worst worst, crankiest, most demonic liberals, like straight from the pits of hell.
Well, I think it's one of those things where you could say, like, not every Tesla owner is a demonic, cranky liberal.
Yeah, they are, Jake. But like, yeah, they are, dude.
But like, a lot of, you know, cranky liberals are going to be Tesla owners. It's sort of one of those things.
They can't tell whether to get hard for Elon or not, because they're like, oh, he's a racist and he supports free speech. It means he's a fascist. But at the same time, his cars are so fucking eco-friendly and good, and they're like a status symbol that makes me feel better than other people. It's like they're edging when it comes to him, and they like want so desperately for him to be part of their cabal, which he is. He basically is, but and that's the reason why I don't get this idea that he's like a dissident or that he cares about free speech. Like, Tesla, it's a market opportunity for him. It's an opportunity for his ego, and it's also an opportunity to push the incentive structure of social media in a way that suits the current agenda. And if you don't think he's part of that agenda, then well, I don't see why.
Elon Musk.
Because he's mates with fucking Joe Rogan.
No, Elon Musk likes Twitter because it literally allows him to manipulate the stock market.
Yeah.
Like, I was almost a little bit convinced that he was going to just pump and dump Twitter through the whole, like, this whole process.
Yeah.
This whole thing. At any point, he could still just sell all of his shares. And it was at, like, 3 whatever the fuck, and it went up to like 47 or some shit, so it made like a 25% increase or something like that.
Yeah.
And then if he literally just sold it all, then you've just pumped and dumped it again.
Yeah.
And this is exactly what he did with all of those crypto things and all of this other stuff. He just moves markets with his social media tweets. Because he's got so much money.
Yeah. It's true.
So, like, that's why he likes social media.
It's true.
It's like, I don't know, man. I think that, and that's also like a whole other world of phony bullshit that I think also needs to fucking die. Like, all the financial crazy investor fucking nonsense that you means you end up with this person like fucking Elon Musk.
You mean you're not trading, bro?
No, I don't have a fucking portfolio. I'm not trading. I don't even believe in cryptocurrencies. I don't think they're fucking the answer to anything.
I think that if a guy is into trading, it's automatically a red flag.
I think it's based as fuck that North Korea literally robbed that fucking NFT game.
Oh yeah,
we spoke about it many times on this podcast. This Axie Infinity fucking NFT game that's like Pokemon NFTs that look like, you know,
shit.
Percy Pigs or whatever. They look like Peppa Pig fucking cartoons. And like the fucking North Korean government have a whole sector of like cyber spies that are trained by the state to hack other things, other institutions to just rob money from them.
Yeah.
And they managed to steal $600 million worth of Ethereum out of this fucking NFT game. And, you know, which was super questionable. There's all these fucking super morally, ethically dubious fucking things around that fucking game anyway. And then the fact that North Korea just literally came and was like, oh, who's going to have all of that? That's all mine now. Thank you very much. Like, that just makes me laugh a lot.
You gotta get it on the grift, dude.
Mates, can you imagine that? Like $600 million. Like people, because there was that those cringy fucking internet influencer like rapper couple that came out after they like did the other crypto heist, and they fucking baited themselves out. And this like cringy woman was like a rapper calling herself the Crocodile of Wall Street and all this cringe shit. And then, like, you're like, oh my god, did some neckbeard literally steal, like, 600 million? But no, it turns out to be North Korea.
Oh my god, oh my god.
So they get, like, state immunity, which basically means that there's, like, no consequences. Like, nothing could happen to them. So
Duce, it's just like, wee. Duce, mate.
Thanks, boys.
Well, it's funny, all of these, like, antisocial characters that have come out of the financial, quote-unquote, internet era. Like that Anna Delphi girl or whatever her name is.
Yeah.
And also that other girl, I forget her name, the one that was posing as a fake tech CEO. Elizabeth Holmes, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
She was like basically trying to make herself into this like female version of Steve Jobs and managed to hoodwink the whole tech industry into thinking that she's like the shit or whatever. And she's like this like pioneer. Just by using some fucking jargon It was literally like an episode of that show, Silicon Valley.
It's just
like
grifters,
fabricated
mate.
Fabricated bullshit.
Grifters to the left and of her me, voice, grifters to the right.
She had this like deep man's voice. It was like the most clear-cut case of like Jungian animus possession that I've ever witnessed in my life. Like her whole thing. You can tell that she sort of idolizes these tech industry men, and that's like her animus. And instead of her trying to integrate it in a healthy way, she like literally wants to become, she put the turtleneck on, deepened her voice and cut her hair. And it's like, yo.
Oh my God.
Like what is, and also that Anna Delvey girl is just like a fucking cluster B nightmare. I wouldn't want to be with her in a dark alley. Like she's literally like an antisocial personality type. The Tindler Swindler, all of these fucking people, and it's just going to get more and more. Like we're just going to see more and more of this shit, even in the political realm. Like AOC is like obviously a grift. They did a casting call in order to find her or some shit. Like everything's just fake. It's all fake.
It's literally,
it's
like
all AstroTurf.
I feel like it's because everyone feels like the world is collapsing, even like minor celebrities, or not even minor celebrities, but like pretty well known celebrities like Jake Paul and a whole bunch of like e-celebs are getting taken to court at the moment for all of their fucking crazy NFT pump and dump schemes and shit.
Mm.
Including even, I don't think Floyd Mayweather is included in the lawsuit, but he's definitely done it like at least three times.
That's
as
so
well.
Bad.
Where like he was the world champion boxer. Like of
so
all
why
time.
Is he grifting with NFTs?
And he's retired now.
What's going
he's
on?
He's retired now. So now he's literally just, he uses his whole platform to just get paid to promote NFTs in this fucking shit way.
Oh my God.
And then like makes a shitload of money and like fucking exits out. Even like people like fucking porn stars are doing it, man.
What?
Yeah. Lana Rhodes did it to like her whole fucking fan base.
She like robbed them with an NFT grift?
She was like, you buy into this NFT series called Crypto Bunnies, which is like a cartoon based on me. And then, you know, it's going to be an investment that's going to get more profitable as we go on and like put more work into it. All of her fans bought into it. She raised like $40 million. And then someone apparently said some mean comments or something in the Discord. So she pulled the plug on the whole thing and took all the money and left.
Damn.
And there's literally no law or anything that's really like set
Everybody's
out to just
like,
be like, no, you can't do that. Like that's fucking robbery. That's literally just like robbing people for fucking not doing anything. Just using your influence as like your fandom.
Everybody's like fucking swindling and grifting left and right.
Mate. It's
but
terrible.
It's antisocial behavior to do that shit.
It's devilish.
And the fact that it's becoming more prevalent worries me, you know. It does worry because I was like the grifter of yesteryear. Of course, there's always been grifters and snake oil salesmen, but they were sort of an antisocial like fringe of society that you would hear tales about and warnings about or whatever. But now it's like if you're not grifting, you're sleeping, mate. If you're not grifting, you're not like fucking grinding and doing like, you know, your due diligence or whatever. And it's like kind of sad to see, and also sad to see the sort of cults of personality that cluster around these antisocial types who like make their name off of like grifting and robbing people and shit.
Yeah,
it's horrible.
And I don't know, like I see a lot of like everybody doing NFTs these days, like even Ozzy Osbourne and stuff.
What?
Yeah,
why?
Because, and like Johnny Depp and like
what?
All sorts of people. Where like literally was like
corny.
And they even both actually said almost the same thing in the advert for them releasing their NFTs, which was really trippy as well. And I do believe that both of them were painting and have been painting probably in their spare time for fucking whatever.
Of
but the wording of both of the adverts was like the same.
Yeah.
Of like, I'm Johnny Depp and I've been painting for years.
Yeah,
but no one's ever
yeah,
seen my paintings.
Yeah.
Now I'm gonna release these NFTs for my fans and give me lots of money. And then fucking Ozzy Osbourne is like doing the same thing. It's just like, guys,
well, think about it though, if you're a celebrity, especially of that caliber, you're already pretty much an NFT. You're already a non-fungible token for, you know, all the enterprises that are making money off of your image, name, face, all
yeah.
of that stuff. So
yeah,
it doesn't surprise me that it translates well, but it's like, it's commodity fetishism at its most absurd. And it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse. Like, I forget the name of the philosopher, but it talks about like the, he talked about the age of death, and he talked about how the age of death followed the Industrial Revolution, when commodity fetishism became a part and parcel of our consciousness, the way we view life. And then it sort of started to translate into the way we viewed other people, to the point where human beings become commodities, and a commodity is a object. It's a dead thing. And how in a society where commodities and commodifying is like the highest value, you're in a dead society that celebrates death and dead objects. And the more we go down this path, the less connected to life we are, and the more the death drive sort of takes hold of us. And I think there's some credence to that. Like, I think that, I don't mean this to be hyperbolic, and I think the reason why everyone's so depressed and feels alienated and fucked up is because now is probably one of the worst times in modern history to be alive. We're in an era of pure commodification and death, death instinct, death drive.
You know, some people would disagree with that and say like, oh, we know we've got like the best medicine and the best technology and everyone's so comfortable and fat. And we've got a surplus food and like everything, so how could you say that? But I think it's like the environment,
the soul of, what, think about the soul, the soul, what does this breed for the soul?
Yeah,
what does this sort of ethos breed for the soul? Why is mental illness so high? Why is alienation so high?
How dystopian does like society have to get for you before you actually try and like live in some sort of like alternative lifestyle commune?
I mean, why do you think?
How much further does it need to go before you just go, fuck it, you know what, I literally, let's go find some like group of hippies in the fucking woods and let's go give it a go. This is fucking stupid.
Well, the very engine that drives it isn't going to stop just because you've gone and lived, you're living in the woods.
Doesn't matter.
And you're wiping your ass with leaves or whatever.
You've got a bit of riposte. You're disconnected from the fucking matrix.
But how disconnected are you really? If you need to, you can't disconnect from it. Commerce and the market control everything. And even if you're on your commute, you still need to buy medicine, resources. You need to be able to sustain yourself. You're probably using the electricity grid. Like, there's no way to escape from the current predicament unless we have, again, foundational change. And it's those foundational changes that people should be focusing on. Not just, even the reason why the internet is such a hostile, shitty place is because it's driven by the exact same market logic that I'm criticizing. All of the fucking psychological issues. And that's the reason why.
But that's not going to change them.
Despite my disillusionment with the left, I could never really be quote unquote right wing in the true meaning of the sense, because I see the way market logic interacts with our social realm, our psychological realm, and how corrosive it is, and how much it's eroded the very things that right-wing people claim to care about, like family values, community, all of that shit. Like, the current order isn't just economic. It also has a psychological and spiritual impact on how we view ourselves, how we view society. And if everything can be reduced to a commodity, we're living in an age of death. And there's a reason why you feel the way you fucking feel. You're not crazy. We're living in an age of fucking death.
But you wouldn't run away to the woods.
What's that going to do? All I'm going to do is like that kid. I can't survive in the woods. Regardless of all my
No, because there's a whole community of other people there in the woods. They're like forming like a little Ewok village. Like, you know, you're making the hobbits run of it. Like, you know, trying to come together in the best way you can. There wouldn't be a point in society where you're just like, you know what, fuck it, I'm just going to go do that for a bit.
I mean, I do want to have and build my own life and like my own happiness and my own community, quote unquote. You have to do that in order to be happy. And I have those hopes and those aspirations. But I don't think that that's a solve-all. I think that that's a little oasis of happiness in a desert of meaninglessness. And there's nothing wrong with creating that. You have to forge your own meaning. You have to do what you can, but I'm not going to say, hey, I have this, here's my cottage core fantasy is like an antidote to like modernity. Cause it's not,
if they started to put like all of your, like if they did the whole digital identity and like digital currency thing, would you be like, nah, that's too much, I'm not doing that, I'm not getting a fucking chip in my hand?
Yeah, of course. If it got to like that level of shit, then I would have to, you know, reconsider some things. But even then, as much as I rail against all of this stuff and I talk about it, I'm still like a fucking bourgeois, decadent, city-dwelling fucking horse girl. Like, I like my creature comforts, and like, I like to be able to go to Gale's and get coffee.
Or it's not even
I'm not a rough and tumble.
It's not even as something as like it's not even as something as aggressive and obvious as like you getting a chip in your hand, but it's actually like just the very nature of the next interface after mobile phones.
You're basically
it's intimately connected to your identity and your medical records and everything as you are as a person, and it is literally your identity.
Yeah.
And that's the way you interact with, and it's how you do your schoolwork, how you interact with job applications. And that's what the internet
it's
is
like
already.
The whole mark of the beast situation where one can either buy or sell without being connected to the grid.
Exactly.
That is the overall plan for where things are headed.
So if it gets to that,
would you unplug?
Are you okay with just like getting on and like doing that? That's what I'm trying to say. Or are you gonna be like, no, I'm gonna go and join one of those like fucking
pirate
crazy, like, you know, bubbles out on the fucking outer rim, and like, you know, and,
so it'd be like a Locust Run situation.
Yeah
but let's enjoy the neoliberal excess until we turn 30, and then we can run away. Like in Logan's Run, you got 2 more years to like deep throat fucking In-N-Out burgers, because it's coming to London soon.
Do you think do you think it's going to be that soon? Do you reckon it will be the next thing after the phone, or it will be like the thing after that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, even, you know, like I forget, during when the whole Justin Trudeau thing happened, and he froze the bank accounts of the truckers and shit.
Mm.
Like all of these little things that are happening, the stuff that goes on in China. Sorry if I sound horrible. My nose is like really blocked because I've been like really ill. I'm really sorry, guys. The stuff that's going on in China, all that stuff, like there's this sort of push to push things into like an overall digital currency system. Like that's the whole Great Reset, blah, 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 blah. A digital currency system that's sort of centralized, which would then enable things like being able to curtail. Yeah, controllable. That is coming down the pipeline. And I don't want to be a fucking part of something like that at all.
It's like, you know,
even if it means I have to go live in Jake's Ewok village. Well, I'll be like the busty tavern wench Ewok. That'll be my job.
But do you think that's even like utopian? The idea that there would be enough people with the will to resist enough to actually try and build something off grid, or that actually human spirit is so crushed that there wouldn't be enough people to make something like that even viable?
I think that there are enough people out there that want to resist the age of death and who still have their spirits intact. And I think that that would inevitably happen. It would be like a two-tier society where you have people who are considered cranks and crazy schizos who basically cluster together, and everybody who's like, everything is awesome and has like the Ukrainian flag in their bio and like,
oh my goodness,
eats the bugs, eats the cicadas, and does all the things they're told, and has the chip in their arm and all of that shit, and like thinks that they're good, responsible citizens because of their deference to the current centralized power system. Yeah, I definitely think that there's going to be a two-tier. I think COVID just gave us sort of a glimpse into it. And you saw how eager the people in power and their sycophants were to be like, yeah, we should ban them from being able to go to grocery stores. Let them stop.
Yeah.
Like, nobody should ever forget. Like, the last 2 years of cruelty, please don't forget. Even what's going on in China now with videos of people screaming. And then, obviously, you have people on the left trying to justify it and being like, yeah, it's fine, it's based.
Nah, it doesn't look very based. Like, it looks pretty terrifying.
Like, I don't know what side you're on, but I'm not on the side that you're on, mate. I think you're crazy and I don't want you anywhere near me. Go away.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus Christ.
I just, like, that's kind of like, I don't know, maybe I've been reading too much Philip K. Dick, but that's the sort of like...
Say dick again.
Oh, dear. No, but like...
I'm joking.
I've been reading too much sci-fi and like... It's just, it feels like the world keeps edging more and more towards that kind of way. And I'm just sort of waiting until
It gets bad enough for you to do the Ted Kaczynski. Like, is
it, everyone's, we're doing it. We're going to the woods. We're going to the woods, everyone. Let's fucking do it. None of it mean anything. I knew it all along. Everyone bring all your shit. We're going to the woods.
Bring all your shit. Jake's got like a wheelbarrow of like comic books and like his PlayStation.
Of course, to contribute to the library.
Oh, cute. I don't know, just as long as it's like a little bougie, just like a little bit of bouginess.
Oh my God.
Just like,
no, but like, not bouginess,
just like some like, feminine touches. Like I can't live in like somewhere that's not like nice.
No, but there's
and that
like,
doesn't have personality and charm.
There is like really interesting, you know, stuff going on with batteries and fucking, and solar panels and all that sort of stuff. So I think like being able to just go exist somewhere else, disattached from places is not going to be totally out of the realm of a possibility.
Well, that's why we were singing the praises of the movie Lapsus so much, is because it sort of is a glimpse into this future where digital nomadism basically becomes the norm for people who are struggling in the gig economy.
Yeah.
And on this trail... Well,
for basically anybody that can't like be in a situation where they can own property and they're like renting and all of that stuff. If you're within that class of people, that's like... basically most people, you know?
Yeah. And that was sort of a motif and theme of a lot of films that were released during that year. Not just Lapsus, Nomadland as well. Follows, you know, it was a really powerful film. I really enjoyed it. It was really sad and harrowing too. It follows the life of a woman who's sort of an Amazon nomad who has given up all of her possessions in order to basically live hand to mouth, driving from location to location, working at Amazon warehouses.
Yeah.
And the precarity of her life, but also this community that she finds with the other nomads who are sort of living this very economically precarious and unstable way of life. And I mean, it's already becoming normalized and prevalent, but it's going to become even more normalized as the economy continues to tank and the upward transfer of wealth continues to go and class warfare is waged against the working class. Like, we're going to see way more of this sort of... I've even seen apps that are now paying people to walk. And I was like, Lapsus wasn't lying. Like, it's literally down the pipeline.
Yeah, go and walk with this tracking device out in this area that we don't have much GPS location information for.
Yeah.
And get paid for it.
Yeah.
Like, it won't be as cool as cassette futurism as, like, taking all these fucking massive cables up mountains and, like, plugging them into a quantum box and all this, like, cool shit. That's like still too cool. we never stick with cool design stuff. But like,
imagine,
you know,
if we had to do that job, it would just be me complaining the whole way. Like, are we there yet?
The thing is with that is that like it speaks to the yearning of like you of like escapism for humans in a tangible way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, oh, not only could I like actually like leave my job in the city doing whatever, being humdrum, abiding all of this stuff, I could literally get paid for going out and adventuring and going into like untracked.
But that's what
parts
it's sold as. That's the thing about these sort of tech utopias, these visions of technological utopia. They pretend as if they're not driven by the profit motive and as if their sole purpose is to sort of enhance the human experience. But what happens in Lapsus? These people are paid to quote unquote have adventures and walk, and that's how it's sold to them. When they actually get on the trail, they're working against the clock for profit and are driven to do all kinds of crazy things in order to make ends meet, basically, and to meet their targets. And it's like that with everything that the digital realm offers you. It offers you, it's like, hey, we've invented this wonderful thing that's going to enhance the human experience and that's going to make you feel more empowered and more connected and this and that. But then it ends up exploiting you because it's driven by the profit motive. And that's not me saying that that's not me judging the personal morality of any tech CEO. It's not about their personal morality. It's about the system in which they operate, the incentive structure within which they operate. They could be Elon Musk could be the nicest, most well-meaning guy in the world who really cares deeply in his little soul, his little African soul, about fucking free speech and all of that shit. But it doesn't matter. The incentive structure is more powerful than even he is.
Yeah. I don't know. Also, you can't call white people African soul. They ain't got African soul.
I'm just joking.
Those white people in Africa, they got Dutch souls. got Dutch and Belgian souls.
I'm just joking.
British souls as well,
to be
fair.
Do you not think that the white South Africans are Africans?
No, bro, they're fucking Dutch. They're fucking Dutch and Belgian and all that shit, aren't they?
I don't know, it's complicated. I've met some white South Africans that feel more African than I am. I'm fucking British. And the same way, I'm more European.
That's more cultural.
It doesn't matter. I'm more European than a white American.
Look at you and your body. Your body. And
but
that's
even then,
that's
how
what
much does that
and
matter?
That's what your soul's connected to.
But so
but the place and where you are and how that shapes you as a person, that's all culture. That's
but
all
that's
like...
The, that's
you
way,
know what I mean?
That has way more significance than just your phenotype and the way you look.
No, your soul comes through, like, you know, your parents...
But yeah,
all
if your parents
shit,
are African and you're on African soil and you've lived among Africans for
white,
most of your life.
But that African is literally put on them
like,
through,
despite the history
through just
of colonialism.
The geographical
I'm not talking about
born in,
I'm not
right?
talking about Boers and all of these like evil racist people. I'm talking about people who
bro,
just
that's,
so happen.
That's shit. Like you'll be
no,
like fucking
dude, not all white South Africans are fucking Boers and like racists and shit. I've met white South Africans who are people like one of the girls I went to boarding school with or whatever. She was like, oh, you're African. I grew up in South Africa. That's my whole life. And she was like, she talks to me about all this African shit. And I was like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I'm from East London, bitch. Like, leave me alone.
But that's,
like,
but that's also because, like, it's the sort of, it's the...
She would talk to me about Africa, like, more than I even knew or
it's
whatever.
It's because of the way Africa's also contextualized for, like, children and, like, everyone, basically.
Yeah.
As the, it's like, Africa, where everywhere there's, like, fucking tigers and lions and shit.
That's
like,
not even
sort of,
true,
like,
though.
No, but that's the whole point. It's like the conceptualization of Africa is that, like, oh, we can talk to you about African stuff because we're both Africans. Like, some Italian person talking to me about, like, European stuff.
Yeah.
It's like,
but you can
bro,
still vibe.
I don't know what the
so
fuck
say
is.
You were in China and you bumped into an Italian guy, you can still vibe with him as like two Europeans on that subject.
Absolutely.
But like for me, I like you meet like white Americans who will claim European heritage, even though they've never set foot outside of their state.
That's all their strange little
I'm
identity
saying, like,
fucking
I'm more
crisis Europe, though, isn't
I'm
it?
More European than those people. And
yeah.
Like you're saying that it's linked to phenotype, whereas it's not linked to phenotype, it's linked to your experience and your culture. So someone like Elon Musk, if I don't know about his life, if he did spend any significant amount of time in Africa, is a fucking African, right?
Yeah.
By all fucking means.
But his soul...
But
his
soul is evil and
his
demon
soul is
and
still,
white.
His soul is still like not
it is.
An African
I mean,
soul
no.
because it's still gone through still.
He's got like blood diamond money, so
yeah.
He's probably part of like the bad
wealthy,
people.
Wealthy
yeah.
white people in Africa,
yeah.
which were never intermingled with or like bred with anybody
of
that
course.
Was actually like African,
native, yeah.
native African,
yeah.
like not. From somewhere else and then now is claimed
I guess the only
African
reason I relate is because I'm a diaspora kid because I'm English am I not or am I not what am I
Elon Musk
I'm
is not a diaspora
crisis.
Kid okay Elon Musk is literally like a fucking is the emperor of earth at the moment basically okay
but he's still
like
third culture
the third richest man behind Xi Jinping and Putin
yeah, but he's
basically
I know but he's also a third culture kid with a weird accent and I can kind of slightly relate a little bit which is the reason why it makes me feel a
man,
little bit
man his marketing team have done a wizard of a job haven't
I'm
they
I'm just joking I'm just kidding but what would you say I am though then
you
yeah
you're British aren't you
yeah but then I'm also Nigerian too ish
you have yeah
and
you
my dad's like Arab
yeah you have
and
like
I lived in America for a little bit
you have like ties and like history with Nigeria
but you wouldn't say I was a Nigerian
did you feel like you were Nigerian when we were in Nigeria
not really no
did you feel like people were eyeing you up and were gonna take advantage of you almost in the same way they were trying to
no,
take advantage of me
like the women assumed that I was your prostitute which is the reason why I was getting a lot of dirty looks, because I was like, oh, whenever there's a Nigerian girl with a white guy, like, that's her meal ticket. And it was like, I'll have you know, Jake was flown here, all expenses paid.
Not by, by my family. By my family. You little shit.
We got to talk about the Jimmy Savile documentary before we close out as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's another thing that, like, bummed everyone in England out over the last couple. Like, shit has already been hard. We've had a hard time this year. Lots of shit's been going wrong. And now they fucking had to trudge up the country's most prolific paedophile and make an entire two episode, was it?
Yeah, it was 2 hour and a half hour episode long special on Jimmy Savile case.
Yeah.
And I think it was definitely a very good documentary.
But we'll fight about it. Let's have a spar.
All right. Hold your horses a second. Let me at least finish my summary of it. I thought it was probably the most informative and well-rounded documentary I've seen on Jimmy Savile. And I thought that it did a really good job of telling the entire story up basically to the point of where everything came out, and there was some ramifications. Didn't really kind of go into all of the backlash afterwards, but it definitely gave you a great, well-rounded story as to Jimmy, of the scale of a public figure he was, because I think people in our generation sort of hear like, oh yeah, he was on the BBC and he had a show. They don't really kind of understand what that actually meant, yeah, like in the 70s or, yeah, in the late 60s even,
yeah,
where the regular viewership for his show was 20 million people.
Yeah, but why? And let's get into that. Reason I didn't like the documentary is because it was supposed to be a blame-shifting exercise that ended up becoming way more incriminating, not just for the British establishment as a whole, but like specifically as well for the BBC. And the reason why I say that is because Jimmy Savile was created in order to bridge the gap between the establishment and the working class. And that's why he was this Willy Wonka magical cultural figure that was associated with fulfilling dreams, not just with the stuff he did on Jim or Fix It in terms of like making kids' dreams come true, but also with all the charity work that he did as well.
Yeah.
He did a lot of charity work. He also, you know, funded a lot of hospitals and things like that. He had this very sort of magnanimous Santa Claus mythos attached to him, which made the establishment look good. And also he could communicate with working class British people because he was from the north. He had a northern accent. He had quote unquote humble origins as a radio jockey. But even, yeah, that side of his past is sketchy to me. I feel like he was an op. I genuinely do feel like he was an op and there was like shady shit going on behind him. And then the reason I didn't like the documentary was because they tried to shift the blame and say, oh, he was the monster that Britain created because we were so greedy and because we all wanted to believe in dreams and fairy dust. We as a collective allowed this man to get away with so much. And it's like, no, the establishment did. The establishment created this fucking Santa Claus figure who was selling dreams to poor people during the height of the Thatcher era, during the height of austerity, where people were the most fucking deprived in this country. They had someone going around pissing money, pissing dreams, pissing, you know, affluence, rubbing shoulders with Princess Diana and the royal family and all these other philanthropic people to make the establishment look benevolent,
yeah,
to the working class public.
But it was another,
they created him. The British establishment were fucking fully responsible. And this documentary tried to turn it around and seem as if, oh, it's the whole country. The whole country was responsible. It was us because we wanted to believe in the myth of Jimmy Savile.
So
nobody did.
So a couple of things on that. Like the I guess like the myth of like Jimmy Savile and all of that stuff. I don't know about all of that, but I think the documentary did do a very good job of showing you how powerful that show even was to create an image that he had. Because you sort of say, oh yeah, you know, he made kids' dreams come true, sure, whatever. And then you see him literally getting kids on Star Trek with William Shatner. That's like a scale of fame and connection of which you do, you to me anyway, was sort of quite illuminating. Yeah. It was like, whoa, you didn't, you thought this was some sort of like little fringe, mamby-pamby BBC, you know, daytime TV shit. No, 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 no. This was international celebrity, all sorts of scale of shit Jimmy fucking did with the BBC to, on these. And you watch some of these clips of kids on motorbikes going through rings of fire.
Yeah.
And it is, like, I was actually, like, quite moved watching some of those clips of the show.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, it really made me understand why people...
Why he was such a compelling figure.
Yeah, why people had that kind of...
reverence, almost godlike.
Yeah, like, that kind of respect and that kind of image of him in their mind.
Why was he so in with the establishment? Because within the sort of deeper fucking upper echelons of the establishment, especially the
because he made TV
aspect,
gold for the BBC.
Well, not just that. It's like it's like the bigger the bigger the crime, the bigger the good deed that is done to cover it up. If you know what I mean. And that was sort of Savile's personal ethos as well, because he was also into the occult and all kinds of fucking weird shit. And it's almost this Manichaean philosophy that he had, which is sort of prevalent. It's prevalent in a lot of different occult systems or whatever. But it was the idea that if I'm going to commit great acts of evil, I have to commit great acts of good to counterbalance it. Well, and I think that that isn't just his ethos. I think that that's the ethos of a lot of the establishment people, which is why they do all this quote unquote philanthropy, quote unquote, because it's their way of laundering the nasty, debauched degeneracy that's going on behind the scenes most of the time.
Yeah.
It's like a spiritual balancing act that they feel that they're constantly engaging in between the depths of their depravity and how they want to appear to the world. And that's, I think Jimmy Savile was at the crux of that. He was a sort of the lightning rod for the entire establishment's dark side, basically.
Yeah.
And he was what laundered it for them and also created a bridge into the public because of how beloved he was by the public. Like, if you have, like, fucking Prince, the Queen's husband, what's his name? Fucking Philip.
Prince Philip, yeah.
If he goes to a children's hospital, the children will cry and they'll be frightened because he literally looks like a Nosferatu. And not to say that Jimmy Savile doesn't look like a Nosferatu, but because of his reputation as somebody who is generous.
He's a clown.
He's a clown, basically.
Yeah.
Because the Americans were like, how could you guys have let this motherfucker with the way he looks run around and not think he was a nonce?
No. Also, sorry, on the clown part as well, the documentary, even to me, there was a number of moments in those clips of Jimmy Savile where he is genuinely funny. He's hilarious.
Yeah.
And I think even it was someone else, Ian Hislop or one of the other big, you know, British broadcasters that was being interviewed in the documentary about him. Sort of like watching those clips, he's like, yeah, you do forget actually how much of a talented broadcaster he was.
Yeah.
It's not just that he was this mad fucking crazy guy running around molesting everyone. He had everyone under a spell.
Yeah, basically.
Like, he was an incredibly charismatic fucking character that was able to fucking, and everybody that worked with him said the same thing, was able to hypnotize anybody, had this intuition about him, knew he could look at you, speak to you for 5 seconds and know exactly who you are, what you're on about, what you stand for, what you want, what you fear, all of that
stuff.
He's
like a machine.
So
on that sort of antisocial spectrum in the sense that he operates in that way.
That's how he could make you fucking love him, fear him, whatever he needed to extract whatever he needed from you, basically. Mm-hmm. And so that's why he was never caught either.
Part of it was his charisma, for sure, but that the prolificness of his crimes, because one of the things that the documentary didn't mention, and most documentaries out there about him don't actually mention, was the horror and the prolificness of his crimes. And the reason it's not mentioned is because of how disgusting and disturbing it all is, and how prolific. We're talking about decades. It's really disturbing shit, dude. And one cannot get away with that much on charisma alone. Charisma was the bridge that he used in order to kind of earn the trust of the public. But what actually protected him was his ties to the establishment. Many of whom are engaged in the exact same kind of thing and are always looking for methods to launder it, whether it be through doing philanthropy. Fucking, what's his name? Jeff Epstein was a fucking philanthropist as well.
I was going to say, there's got to be someone doing a bit of a snoop into...
Or through having a larger-than-life media figure who's connected to the public in a way that they can't be connected to the public.
There's got to be someone doing some snooping on if there was a connection between Savile and Epstein.
Because of course, I'm sure there was. In
the 90s was when Epstein was doing a lot of all of his fucking shady stuff in the late 80s and 90s, and that crosses over with, like, you know, Savile was not an old man at that point. He was still very active, and I think even Jim Will Fix It was still running in the early 90s. So, like, I would be so surprised if there was not any kind of communication or sort of, like, link between, you know, literally the pedophile fix-it guy in the UK and, like, the international
link to the establishment was what protected him and why he was... Even fucking decade, the whole thing with Theresa May where she fucking hid the Home Office report and all of that fucking shit.
Yeah.
Like, they've been protecting this motherfucker for years. And I was like, why would they... Why was he so... Because I didn't know the whole story. I was like, why was he so important? Wasn't he just some fucking radio jockey? Why was he so in? When I watched the documentary was when I realized, oh, the reason why is because he was a link to the working class from the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
During the Thatcher era, people were fucking deprived as shit.
Mm-hmm.
People were deprived as fucking shit.
And he was best buds with Maggie.
With Margaret Thatcher as well. If during an era where there's austerity, where there's economic tension, where entire industries are crumbling, to have a Willy Wonka Santa Claus figure going around fixing it for people and giving donations to hospitals that are saving kids' lives and shit, like that shit helps the establishment.
That's what was so interesting about, I guess, their friendship was that although a lot of what Jim seems to do is charity... And that doesn't seem particularly, you know, social care and all of that, taking care of people that are less fortunate, doing their last wishes, all of that stuff, mm-hmm. or just making dreams come true. That does not really ring true with, like, conservative government ethos in any way. But I think her attitude was like, no, Jimmy is like a self-made guy and, like, talks about basically bringing yourself up and getting and like fucking not relying on help from others and all of that kind of thing. And if you've got more, then help other people, essentially.
But not just that, it was taking exactly pressure away from the private sector. Sorry, taking pressure away from the public sector and pushing it in towards the private sector, which is the reason why rich people love charity and galas and shit like that.
Mm.
Because why not have social problems be addressed through the good grace and favor of others.
Well, also that money can disappear a lot quicker. Actual
functioning infrastructure.
That money can disappear a lot easier if a organization just happens to not file whatever papers and all of that stuff, exactly. right? Versus an actual body of government exactly. having all of that money that is accountable to taxpayers exactly. and everything else, right?
Exactly.
Like,
it was all an op. It was all a giant op, and it's the reason why he was able to get. It was the reason why even when he died, he was given a state fucking funeral. And obviously it was common knowledge that he was a nonce by that point, but it hadn't been officially kind of sanctioned by the media narrative.
Well, the full investigation hadn't come out, and like the and
but
I think
people
the,
have been saying the, it for years and victims had been coming, thousands. We're not even talking about 5, 6, 7, thousands of children whose lives were ruined. Like, some of the women who were talking in the documentary about the experiences there, I wanted to cry, I wanted to throw up, I wanted to be sick.
It's
really horrible stuff. Thousands of victims. He abused the power he had at these children's institutions, hospitals. What kind of sick fuck goes into a children's hospital where kids are literally dying and inflicts that extra fucking shit on them? He was a sick, sick, twisted man, and he was able to get away with it because of his ties to the establishment, what he represented to the establishment, and also because, again, one act of evil, one act of good. That's how they launder their consciousness. Because you always think, oh, these people in the establishment are psychopaths. Yeah, some of them are psychopaths, but a lot of them are like people who just have very warped and distorted moral compasses.
Mm.
They have it's like with the mafia, for instance, you know, like when the Italian mafia was like a thing and it was very powerful, they were still Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
They would kill a motherfucker and like gut him and then go to confession and then feel better. It's their way of attempting to launder their
atonement.
Atonement.
That was a big thing for Jimmy Savile as well, because I don't know about all the occult stuff. I haven't really read
Well, people say he was a Crowleyan acolyte or whatever, yeah, because he like made reference to Crowley in some of his outfits and the stuff. But I don't even think it was as like surface level as Thelema. I think it was deeper. It was some kind of weird Manichaean philosophy that he was operating on.
Well, he was publicly very Catholic. So like, I think...
Yeah, he was publicly like, Catholic, but I think that was a front.
Atonement is all like...
wrapped up in the Catholic, yeah.
So I think that's all like part of his thing was sort of like, and it was all about, what was it? He said, I'm not a bad guy. I'm a screwy guy. I'm not a smart guy. I'm a screwy guy or a funny guy or something like that.
Yeah.
So if a smart guy will eventually will slip up and someone will catch him slip up, but a funny guy doesn't matter if he slips up because you never really, that's just him being funny. Do you know what I mean?
Like some of the stuff he said is just so, and he was kind of confessing. But it was just weird.
What I mean by that is that sort of like he saw everything in his own sick game theory kind of way, right? Of like, oh, these are the rules. Okay, so I can do this if I do this.
Yeah.
Like finding loopholes, finding ways to do whatever his will actually wanted, but through the gay method of whatever his reality was. And that was Catholicism. And that was his belief method.
Mm.
So if his deep down,
the Catholicism was really, a front for something deeper.
What really is my sexuality, which does seem like it because he didn't have girlfriends or wives or anything like that. This wasn't a secret second life. This was like his sexuality, basically.
Yeah.
So I think his justification then was, oh, okay, well, if this is my sexuality, then I've got to do a lot of this to make up for it.
Mm.
And this was just the rules of the game for him.
Yeah. But his sexuality was warped and it even went down into the realm of necrophilia as well, dude. Like, I don't even want to go into it, but he was a fucking sick dude, like properly ill, and he wouldn't have gotten away with it. And he wouldn't have destroyed as many lives as he had destroyed.
What's fucked up as well is it kind of...
If it wasn't for the establishment, they're the ones to blame. And the reason I didn't like this documentary is because they were trying to lay the blame on everyone's feet. Like, there was even some BBC fucking guy. All the BBC people who they even interviewed in the fucking documentary were like, oh, we didn't know! And what can we say? It's just one of those things that we all have to collectively learn from. And I was like, really, motherfucker? Look, are you fucking serious?
Hindsight's 2020, man. Like, hindsight's 2020.
They fucking knew, but they didn't want to say shit because they didn't want to ruffle feathers, and they also didn't want to put themselves in opposition to the powerful establishment. And they listened to the stories coming from these fucking children's mouths about horrors beyond fucking belief. Well, it's one of those things where it's like the reason people don't want to talk about it or look at it is because it's just so fucking depressing.
It is.
And like, it's not even like this is the tip of the iceberg. Like, this is like, this is the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more even deeper. How many fucking people in the Houses of Lords have been accused of fucking noncery and pedophilia and shit? How many of them? How many?
Yeah, like a lot of them. Well, I mean, I don't know about these days, but like definitely back in the day, there were like connections to all sorts of fucking bad stuff.
Been going on for ages. If you hear stories coming out of children's hospitals, boys' boarding schools, all of those different places.
The other thing that it did as well is like it puts sort of, I don't know, financial sort of, you know, how much money the elites really have, like sort of confuses me a little bit when you watch that documentary as well. So I think he raised like, what was it, £5 million? In 2 weeks or something like that, which was crazy. And I think even to this day is like one of the biggest fundraising efforts ever to get these hospital wings built.
Mm.
And then the royals come along at the end to just smile and wave and give it the fucking seal of approval.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, dude, how much money do the royals have?
So much. They're the biggest landowners in the world, almost. The Queen owns so much land, not just in this country, but other parts of the Commonwealth.
Could they not literally... £5 million and it not even be off the water off a duck's back?
Yeah.
Or is this just my peasant brain thinking they like are so wealthy it's beyond measure? And, and actually, they've only really got like £10 million between all of them.
No.
And that is still enough to kind of separate them us from the rest of the world these days.
They have a lot of money and a lot of assets.
They made it out
the
like
the duchy is pretty fucking rich, dude.
The way that the royals were talking about it when he did all of that stuff was like, this is an unimaginable amount of money for you to raise. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, you
could have all of it, on the click of a fucking finger, if you wanted to. Including Jimmy Savile, all of it is myth-making. And part of the myth that has held this country together for an incredibly long time is this idea of a benevolent elite. And you still see it when we go out to the countryside to visit your parents. Some of your family are still fucking royalists. Some of the people we talk to out there are still fucking royalists. It's this idea that the people in the higher positions, like Princess Diana, for instance, her entire image, she was almost like a goddess. She was almost like a Kuan Yin figure or like a Mother Mary figure. This idea that she was this benevolent, charitable woman who was hugging AIDS patients and starving African children. Like, this image of a benevolent elite is what kind of keeps the social order together. Because, okay, those people have their position, but they have it insofar as they do charity to take care of the needs of the poor. But imagine if Princess Diana exists today, she wouldn't be met with the same kind of reception and reverence. People would be so much more critical and skeptical of her. Like, I remember I watched an interview with Princess Diana where some journalist basically asked her, isn't this just kind of a photo op for you? Like, these kids are really starving. Like, how much do you know about the situation? What exactly is it that you propose to do? And she literally stormed off crying and was so offended. And everybody was on Diana's side, obviously. Like, oh, how could you talk to the princess in such a way, you evil journalist? But if the same thing had happened today, obviously people would be on the journalist side. People, there's that myth of the benevolent elite is now no longer tolerable.
Yeah, but it's all, like, I don't know. If I was Diana, my fucking response would be like, you know, I'm a royal in Africa, mate. I can't be fucking around with like local affairs. Like, what do you think this is? Like 1954. This isn't my country anymore. It's not for me to do fucking any of that. Like, I can come and, you know,
in that way, or like media savvy.
What, you want this to be British again? Like, you want this to be Britain again, and for me to get involved? For me to be the Duchess of this fucking place? Because I'll become the Duchess of this fucking place.
But no, that's what I'm saying, is that whole myth of the benevolent elite was a lot easier to spin in 1995 than it is in 2022, if you know what I mean. But when Jimmy Savile was operating, that myth was very much still in effect, which is why they had to do the whole, oh, 5 million, what a whopping generous sum. And then they do the photo op and they fucking take pictures at the wings of the hospital and they cut ribbons and all of that fucking shit. It's all an op. It's all myth making. It's all meant to launder the excesses of our current order.
So here's a big question then. Do you reckon, like, you know, from your 21st century media lens, do you think Diana was a grifter trying to make a celebrity a brand name
Diana's
for herself?
Diana's the prototype. Diana's
and
the...
And she never had a diddly fucking...
My mom will cry because my mom's...
Let me finish. She never had a diddly fucking, like, interest in actually, like, you know, staying with Charles. She was going to do her duty and then, like, have this, like, little name for herself being whatever afterwards.
No.
And that it was all cynical, all of that stuff. It was all just to build a brand. That she was a kind-hearted lady that did nice things and she just
Diana
cared.
Diana was the prototype of middle-class malingering, okay? And I don't... My mom will cry for me saying this because my mom's, like, the biggest Diana stan. And I like Diana in terms of, like, the way I like a Barbie doll or the way that I like Marie Antoinette or whatever, just as this, like, sort of feminine icon. But as a person, she was the prototype of the social justice malingering BPD ho. Which is exactly what she was. Mm. She used social justice and activism as a way of launching her platform as a media figure and of having a use, and of having a purpose. And a lot of her projection, a lot of what she did with the poor was projection, because she had like borderline personality disorder and all of these issues. And she was sort of projecting her inner turmoil onto AIDS patients, cancer patients, starving African children. She was like, I feel hurt and I feel maligned and my husband's cheating on me as well. So I feel exactly like this dying AIDS patient.
I feel hungry too.
Yeah, literally.
They try to feed me lobster, but I shan't eat it because I feel too sad.
Yeah, she had like bulimia and she was like throwing up everywhere. Like literally, she was like the prototype for that fucking celebrity philanthropist myth making again. And those people are usually used again as justifying linchpins for the current order. It's okay that we have this like debauched elite because you know what, they're doing good and they have this good profile, this good profile of giving and philanthropy and all of this stuff. Why do you think that as soon as like some heiress or some rich man's wife decides that they're bored or they've had a bit of a mental breakdown or they've had a bit of a drinking problem, they push them into quote unquote philanthropic work?
Do you reckon maybe Jeff Bezos's wife, like ex-wife, you know, she's been on like her giving pledge or whatever to give away like the billions and billions and billions of dollars that she got from her from divorcing Jeff Bezos.
Oh my God.
She's given away like so many billions in the last like how many years to like charitable funds and stuff.
That's not to say that like not everybody who gives.
Do you reckon it's because she enjoys stem cell soup?
Listen, yeah, I'm not trying to besmirch the personal morality of people who I don't know or whatever, but I don't think that the personal morality matters. It's the fact that they exist in a system, again, of like incentives.
Yeah.
And the incentive to launder one's excesses through charity, through like we even see it with like social justice, like people hide their antisocial and self-interested oftentimes proclivities behind the idea of doing social, like Patrice Cullors, leader of Black Lives Matter, now has like how many mansions in LA.
Yeah,
like it's all fake and gay, which is what everyone needs to realize. You need to look at things with, like, you can't just say, oh, Jimmy Savile, what a bad man. He's an op. The media created him in order to appeal to the working class. There's a million Jimmy Savils operating right now in this day and age.
Yeah.
There are millions of, there's fucking so many of them. All these people who you're worshipping in the media and all that shit. How many of them are fucking plants? How many of them are ops? How many of them are there and are supported for the express purpose of manipulating you psychologically away from like engaging critically with the culture that we're in right now? So fucking many. And that was what I found the most disturbing about the documentary. Isn't just about the story of Jimmy Savile and what happened in the past, but how everyone's like, oh, how awful that happened, how could we have not known? Look at what's going on now. Look at what's going on now.
Well, they got R. Kelly.
I don't just mean R. Kelly. I mean certain, you know, influencers, who have discords full of 15-year-olds, That's all I'll say.
Is that a lot of influencers?
You bet your bottom dollar. It is a lot of influencers.
Oh dear.
But yeah, that was a weird thing this week for sure. I don't know. Do we recommend watching the Jimmy Savile documentary?
Oh yeah, it's the best one on the case. So if you like true crime, like, you know, bad historical pedophilic cases and stuff, and you like the Jeffrey Epstein documentary and all that shit, then yeah, you should like watch this one as well.
I don't know. It's kind of nightmare fuel.
Oh man,
real big nightmare fuel. But yeah, during this time as well, ironically, when the Jimmy Savile doc came out, there was also a bunch of grooming discourse going on Twitter where everyone was calling each other groomers. And that's one thing I've noticed is how the political pendulum swings when it comes to pedophilia shit. It's like one minute it's traditionally right-wing institutions that are being accused, like the Catholic Church or evangelicals. The next minute, traditionally left-wing institutions like Hollywood and the entertainment industry, the BBC, are the ones that are under fire. And then it's like each side is like, you're a pedophile. No, you're the pedophiles. And I'm like, guess what, guys? You're both pedophiles, okay? You're both fucking pedophiles. None of you have your fucking hands clean. Like, there's no institution, regardless of which. And I think it's dumb to look at issues like that purely through a political lens. There are some times where it matters, and for sure that's the case, but like if you're looking at it purely that way, you don't actually care about kids. Like,
yeah,
you're just a wingnut.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's been weird. I don't want to hear any more about grooming and pedophilia for a while. It's
yeah
it bums people out.
That topic has been done for this year.
Yeah, no more, please. It's going to come cycle round in next year. Next month, it will be abortion again. Fucking, ugh, just exhausting.
Oh, dear.
Just exhausting. But anyway, it was lovely to talk to you guys. We've got some bonus episodes up on the Patreon. So join the Patreon, get access to bonus episodes. We also have a book club. We're currently reading Robert Anton Wilson's Cosmic Trigger. We missed last week because I hurt myself. Jake got ill. It was just not a great week. But this week, we're book club is back on. So if you want access to all of the fun things we do, feel free to sling us $5 on Patreon. It always helps. And thank you for being patient for this week's episode as well. Sorry it's a bit late. We had a bit of a disaster week last week, but we're back on the horse. Love you guys. Goodbye.
Bye.